Well, it's 5:30, so we'll go ahead and get started. The first thing I want to mention, let me go back to my notes here, is that I've learned that item 2B, which is the Macadam Road Water Upgrade Project Design Supplement, does not require council approval. It was inadvertently placed on this agenda. So with if everybody's okay, I'm going to remove item 2B from the agenda. You guys okay with that?
You want council to give you approval to remove a non-council item?
Sure.
Okay, you got it.
All right, so we will not talk about that. So, okay, so let's move forward into our first agenda item, which is the permanent small wireless facilities update. Ms. Gerloff.
So, good evening, everyone. Nora Gerloff from Community Development, and it sounds like everyone is excited to have a discussion about telecommunications policy this evening. So this is something that we've been working on for a while. You saw the temporary ordinance earlier this year, and this is we're coming back to you with the permanent ordinance. So I'll kind of give some context around that. We have an existing chapter in our zoning code around telecommunications facilities, and that was written a number of years ago, and that handles what we call macro facilities. So that's monopoles, lattice towers, building co-locations, kind of the traditional things we thought of as, cell tower or cellular communications infrastructure. But of course, technology changes all the time. And so there are new needs for our cellular carriers. And so they need a denser network of smaller antennas to handle the increased data needs that people are doing so much more on their phones. So what they've come up with, the solution is these, they're calling small cells. And so these are generally located on utility poles in the right of way, which are sort of conveniently spaced and already existing. And so they're adapting this denser network of antennas to go in this right of way. So, there's of course a pressure, talking about upgrading to 5G and providing this better service for people. So again, we adopted a temporary ordinance that was a standalone ordinance, pretty much based on some model language that had been developed. And that was valid for 6 months. It's going to be expiring in October. So in the meantime, we've gone through and have been developing what we'd like to have as our permanent regulations for this. So this is taking, really substantively similar regulations that were in that temporary ordinance, but integrating it into the framework of the TMC and this existing wireless facilities ordinance. So kind of making it play well and integrate with the rest of our code while being not so different than the regulations you looked at previously. And, as we look at these, we need to always keep in mind that the FCC has a lot of very detailed regulations. So there are areas that are subject to local control, but there are a lot of areas, just for consistency nationwide between these different, all the different carriers and all the different local regulations and jurisdictions, they're trying to provide some consistent rules and like a level playing field to roll these things out. Individual cities are allowed to impose reasonable aesthetic standards because, as you can imagine, this can be a lot of equipment and wires and antennas and things like that are they're trying to be integrated into our urban areas. And so we can have some say in how those things look, but we do need to make sure that these regulations are adopted in advance, that they're clearly understandable for our cell carriers and for the industry, and that they're, can be reasonably implemented. We're not trying to push them out through intensive regulations that can't be met. So City Attorney Emily Miner and our Eric Compton in TIS have spent quite a bit of time working through these issues. They've worked very closely with industry, and there's been a lot of dialogue back and forth, both on that temporary regulations and as we've been developing this permanent code. And that's also included discussions about the pole designs. So in a case where a carrier is looking to locate on a certain utility pole, a lot of times that means they need to take that pole out and replace it with another pole. So coming up with what that pole should look like and what those regulations are, it's been an intensive process that we want to make sure, again, something that works for both all the different carriers as well as for the city. So based on that, we routed this permanent ordinance for comments, and we got a table, attachment B in your packet. It's this table of industry comments that we received along with the disposition of them. So some of them were sure, great, thanks for catching that. We're putting this in the ordinance. A few of them were, you know, those sort of judgment calls about sort of balance of power between maybe what's best for the industry and what we think is best for our city, and trying to come up with, you know, some kind of nuanced language around that. So some of them we didn't accept. So then we went and had a took this to the Planning Commission. We had a public hearing. Again, we heard a little more from the industry folks. And the Planning Commission made a couple small adjustments in the regulations. I think smart changes, you know, they kind of listened again to some of the concerns they had and made some minor tweaks. All things that are very workable and that staff has no concerns about moving those forward. So the overall goal, you know, with this regulation, it's highly technical, but, you know, when you stand back and look at it, the idea is that we really want to provide coverage in the least obtrusive way possible. You know, this is a lot of infrastructure and a lot of things that, you know, just by their nature have to be out visible to the public, and how can we do that in a way that, you know, keeps our urban areas looking, you know, as clean and as streamlined and non-cluttered as possible. You know, and then the other goal for this is to really streamline review for our preferred designs. So like our probably the easiest type of installation to live with might be a co-location on a commercial industrial building that's really well screened and integrated with the architecture, and you just wouldn't know it's there unless you saw it. And so that's great. That's a no-brainer, fastest way to approval. You know, that's not going to work for every situation. And so we do accept that in some cases, you might need a new monopole and maybe it's going to have to go in a residential area. And so there is a process for that, but that's something that we really need to work through a lot of criteria, and it requires a more intensive review. But there is a relief valve for industry getting the things that they really have to have in order to provide that service. So we feel like we've, again, working with Emily, she's really great on this one, that she has a really good grasp of both the FCC regulations and a lot of what our neighboring cities are doing. So making sure that our regulations kind of fit in and are consistent with the type of things that other cities are regulating and coming out with, we think is the best outcome for the needs that we have. The other part of this puzzle, and I may ask Eric to jump in if we have some detailed questions about that, was really adopting those standards for the new poles. So if you're going to put all those wires and things and conduit and whatnot inside the pole, it needs to be a little bigger. But we felt like having a slightly bigger pole, but that was still sleek and presented a finished appearance for all of that, was a better choice. That when you look at a row of poles that are all sort of the same color and the same design, and maybe one's a little bigger, it's not going to jump out at you as much as a case where you have to have a lot of equipment bolted onto the outside and it just looks more cluttered and messy. So coming up with this smart stack design where things are much more integrated, we thought was the best way to go. You know, so overall, we feel like we've really put a lot of work into balancing, you know, the city priorities with the industry needs and then the federal regulations. And so we're hoping we're pretty close on this one. But it, you know, it's kind of a beast of an ordinance. It gets really long when you have all that strikeout underline and moving stuff around and new definitions. I'm happy to jump into more detail on any of the areas, you know, you'd like to dig into. But rather than having a monologue, I feel like I'd like to check in with you and see what areas you'd like to discuss further.
Great. Thank you, Nora. I think what we'll do is I will ask my fellow council members if they have any like overarching questions, and then we can get into some specifics if needed. So I'll start with Council Member Quinn. Do you have any questions, comments, big picture?
Yeah, that's all I have as far as questions is overarching. And so I just wanted to thank Nora and the team for giving such quality reading for the weekend. when you talked about kind of expedited accommodation for like industrial area that's screened. I just want to make sure that my question is more of making it predictable when those things occur and making it clear when they don't is key. But and maybe that's the only thing I have to add today, because I'm very comfortable with Emily Miner and our city attorney's work and the history and the comparisons and things. And so it's really the expectations are clearly defined in here, because I'm sure just based on some the comments, there was somehow an expectation, you know, that, hey, we can work around this. And it's like, no, we all have made it clear that that's the kind of thing that would go through kind of a different process. So just the clarity and when those things occur and the process associated when they don't.
Sure. So definitely like co-location is sort of the top, you know, let's use the existing infrastructure and things that we have available, and then co-location in commercial, co-location in like multifamily, then it would be maybe a new facility in commercial. And then, you know, the lowest one that you really have to walk through all the steps and prove the need would be a new facility in a residential zone, especially a single family zone. So, you know, it's one of those things where kind of just like, you know, sensitive area regulation, you know, first you need to try and avoid, and then you need to try and mitigate, and you just have to kind of walk through those processes and show your work till you get to the level that we really agree that that's what you need to be able to do.
Thank you, Deshaun. Councilmember McLeod.
Nora, as I was out talking to some residents, one of them asked me, do we have 5G already in the city? This resident thought there was something like that down around Far West Paint. I said, I don't think so, but I'll check. And when I checked, it told me there was one 5G tower up by church or United Methodist Church and not at Far West Paint. So I guess I want to ask, did the public process, the public hearing with the Planning Commission, did you get much public turnout to that?
No, actually, the only people who showed up for that were our industry representatives.
So based on the fact that I got that question and your answer right there, I just wonder, do we feel that the public knows enough of what's going on around them that they can at least have the chance to weigh in and express whatever concerns they have? And I'm not sure how that would go, because this is kind of ready to go forward, right?
Yeah, we're hoping. You know, again, it's pretty technical. There are some things written into the ordinance for when a particular location has been chosen, that there's some notification around. And that's really where people could probably have more concerns, you know, like when it's the thing that they're seeing outside of their window. Some of these larger ones, our scope of, you know, flexibility is kind of small on some of these things.
Well, I didn't, the one up by the Riverton Church doesn't jump out at me, so apparently it's concealed well enough. But I just, you know, hearing this concern from a resident, I just wanted to ask about it, and where would they have a chance to speak to it now that the Planning Commission hearing is already over? You know, where would be a place for a resident to speak up and give their concerns on it?
You know, and we're really following the procedures that have been in place for, I think, over 10 years that, you know, we haven't required notice boards and other types of things for these installations in the past. Again, unless it was something that triggered the, you know, hearing examiner review. Most of these are by design administrative, and, you know, I think we've not had a lot of concern or outreach from the public around them in the, you know, fairly good track record that we have so far.
I don't have any further questions.
Thank you, Nora. And, you know, and I echo the comments of my fellow council members. I think this is one of those things, you're right, it's highly technical. And I do believe that, for example, let's just say they were going to put it in my front yard. I think there are mechanisms in here in play that would allow somebody to provide input, Plus, the other thing is this is going to go to the committee of the whole. So if we do, you know, people are following the issue, people want to make comments, they will have an opportunity on the 27th. That's correct?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very comfortable with this. I just have one little weird question. Back in the exhibit table, it's, I think it's page 57. There's just, it, and I don't even, I didn't even go back. It just caught my eye. There, I guess, is the Planning Commission still discussing something? Because this says item number 20, Verizon considers striking this section to city PC to discuss. Is that the point? So is the Planning Commission still discussing that? Or?
So we carried over the table from that, because this was the industry comments that were sort of frozen in time at that. They did discuss that, but they didn't make any changes.
Great. Okay. So I think I'm comfortable with this. I think my fellow council members are comfortable enough to have this move forward then to the September 27th Committee of the Whole, which then would go on to the October 4th regular meeting.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. So then that moves us on to item C, which starts on page 69 of our packet, sewer lift stations 2, 4, and 12. And Adib, you're going to take this one, right?
Yes, I am.
He's there. Great. Take it away.
All right. So this is a, we are asking for a supplement agreement to contract 21033 for the all-encompassing contract for lift stations 2, 4, and 12. This is for a little bit of design and mostly construction management. And the a little bit of, it's going to be some background. Lift station 12 is the one that's at APW and Strander by KeyBank, just in the parking lot there. Lift station 2 is the one at Minkler and APW, and that's by Hayek Leather Furniture Store. And lift station 4 is the small one at Cascade and Cascade Avenue, Todd Boulevard by Culligan Water used to be there in that area, so it's right across the street. And we have TACE working on the design and construction management for all three of them. They were designed separately and then went to bid at the same time. So we combined the contract for that. The reason we ran low on money, there's two reasons, actually. The main one, there were a couple of delays for with contractors for lift station 4 and 2. Just procurement of materials and so on. And typically when we have a delay, our contract gets stretched and we spend a little bit more than we want to. So that's part of it. The other part of it is we were hoping to do a good chunk of the construction management in-house, have our CIP inspector go out there, since that's typically a lot cheaper than having a consultant do it. But we do not have the bandwidth right now. So we have to go that route, but it's the same consultant. We haven't had any issues with them. They've been doing good work. And we are asking for $53,000 here to be added to the original contract of $71,410, and we are hoping to approve it to be on the consent agenda for the September 27th regular meeting.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Council Member, I'll start with Council Member McLeod. Questions, comments?
I did not have any questions on this. So it seems pretty straightforward to me. And so nothing to ask or add.
Great. Thank you. Council Member Quinn.
I didn't really have any questions, fairly straightforward. Just a question about the design and then, you know, kind of taking this into the contract, right? Sometimes when you have design, sometimes there's a conflict and just want to make sure we're prepared for those pieces, because then that could lead to, shouldn't, but lead to change orders. So just wondering how we address those.
Absolutely. And we are coming up on the wet season now, so we are taking that into effect. If there's any more delays and we need to wait the wet season because we can't excavate, we do have contingency plans to change certain design aspects.
Okay, well, and I'm fine with this. This comes out of the sewer fund, right? This is finance.
100%.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, well, it looks very straightforward to me. So I think we can, for all agreement, we'll move this forward to the September 20th regular consent agenda. Great. Moves us on.
Thank you.
That moves us on to item D, which is the 42nd Avenue Bridge, South Bridge Replacement Project 100% design change order number one. So, Mr. Cox.
Good evening, committee. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good. So this is kind of in lieu of the amount of money approved for the PSRC STP funds that were granted back in July. This is a supplement to take Transect Engineering to go from the 30%, which was contracted or approved by council on November 20th, 2020, and move it to 100% design with using the federal funds from the PSRC STP grant. We took the amount of funds, When we actually advertised this project back in July or May of 2020, we did it within a federally lag manual effort. So we had the federally mandated amount of time to be advertised. The interviews, the selection was all done to federal standards, which was then allowed us when we then applied for the PSRC federal funds, we were able to use that accreditation for doing that to get a federal grant number, as well as get a DBE, UDBE, disadvantaged business enterprise number for our consultant, which then allowed us to direct select Transect Engineering to go from the 30% to 100% without having to re-advertise, to waste time and effort to go out there and select the firm to go from the 30 to the 100%. So that is kind of the procedures that we took before getting this grant. And then we are requesting that this be moved on to the consent agenda to be approved to go to the full 100% design, which is estimated to be completed in December 2023. There is a kind of a caveat that we have to acknowledge is that there is a little bit difference in funding that was brought to attention during the information, is that the cost assumed during the initial estimate and scope of work was $1,483,203. During the submission of the agenda packet, we did receive the WSDOT ICR overhead rate from Transect, and it did increase from 120% in the cost estimate to 131.38%, which increased the cost approximately $45,000. And so the new total for the 100% design is $1,528,174, which gives the grand total of $2,606,661. So there's a little bit of change because we got that last minute, but that will be reflected in the next meeting coming up on September 20th. A lot of information spit out there.
Thank you. Hari, did you have something to add before we go on?
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge the staff's hard work and also the council's hard work, the conversations we had with PSRC, that the contingency funds were directed towards our project, and staff's hard work allowed us to proceed forward with the existing Trantec, which is a huge savings in time and also saving in money, because usually if you transfer from a 30% designer to another designer, that would cost additional, getting familiar with the project, additional hours from the consultant. So I just want to acknowledge all of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Hari. All right, we'll start with Council Member Quinn.
I mean, the obvious question is, affirming the driver of the 130%, but I mean, in some ways it's fairly straightforward, but if you wanted to add to the discussion otherwise, I know when you go from a certain percentage of design to 100%, that there's going to be a change. So maybe just speak to the significant increase.
Adam, you want to talk about the increase that you just received today?
Oh, yeah, that was the $45,000 increase. Like I said, was Trantech submitted their overhead rate to WSDOT for their annual approval. And unfortunately, it usually takes about a month review to go through all their financials to get that information. They submitted the scope of work and cost estimate with an assumed rate that they were going to get. Then they finally got the rate back at the end of July. Had some discredits or discerns with that rate, had some discussions, and then not until late last week is when we received the actual rate. It does help as well is that when we did the 30% design, their overhead rate was 148%, and so it's actually down to 131%. But they, like I said, when they put the scope, we wanted to get the ball rolling to use some of these federal funds right away. And that was the 120% was their estimate to get us to this point. And then this is us kind of updating with you with the correct numbers that we received on Friday.
Right. And just for clarity, on construction, the increase is overhead, but it might be, so I'm assuming it's attributed to the kind of specialty they would need to be concentrated on this project. And then on your end, on the back end, we verified that need is appropriate to meet this contract.
Correct. Yeah, this is an annual federal audit that they've gone through to get that standard rate. And they do it every year. So they analyze all the financials from 2020 to say that this is your approved rate for 2021.
Yeah, so Councilman, but the good news is with the PSRC, we have a partnership with the local agency. So they're part of the Department of Transportation. So every payment, every invoice, every estimate, everything goes through them. They're partners with us. They will check our numbers. They will tell us what the industry standards are, where things are going now. So I think this will really help us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deshaun. Councilmember McLeod.
Probably the only thing I would either ask or add on the informational memo, can you put on there and maybe just the 43,000 that you say is the difference? And if I understand this right, it's at 30%, they kind of estimate a number. And then when they go to 100% design, they have an actual number, and that delta is 43,000, right?
So this is the cost that we originally given to go from 30 to 100 was that 1.4 million with the 120% overhead, and then the additional cost is just the when they went to 138% or 131% overhead is that the difference is just that 11% in overhead rate throughout the whole project.
I would like to see the number 43 in the memo.
Okay.
If I could add that to it just for a little clarity versus me having to figure out what's the difference and start doing some math, pencil stuff out. It's 43,000 and this is why we have that. That's all, thank you. I'm okay with this moving forward.
Yeah, and that's a good suggestion, Tom, to just make it in addition to making the edit to the big number, put that smaller number and the percentage in there, and I think that will help the rest of the council on that one. And I didn't have any this is very straightforward. We've seen these a lot, so I think that's fine. So this should go to the regular consent agenda on September 20th. Are Tom and Deshaun, are you okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we'll do that. All right. I think that's it. I see that Kelly Simons, you have your hand up. Was there something that you wanted to address us with or?
No, I don't know how my hand got up. But we'll see you at the council meeting and on Wednesday. But we never, still a lot of us in the neighborhood never got our notices about the Wednesday meeting. A lot
okay.
of people never got them in the mail. So,
okay. Well, I figured
we'll see you there.
I figured if you were going to say something, you would have interrupted. You would have not interrupted me, but you would have told me.
Yeah, you know.
All right.
I'm still at work, and I drive through that tunnel. I keep getting kicked off when I go through the tunnel.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Right. But, okay, yeah. I think we're good there, and I'll see everybody at 7 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.